Episode number 15 of The Champion is brought to you by ShipStation.com! The holidays, they're coming up. If you are the kind of person who sells stuff online and then ships stuff to the people who bought it, you've got to check out ShipStation.com. It is the fast and easy way to manage and ship your orders all in one place. It doesn't matter whether you sell on eBay, Amazon, Etsy, or over 50 other popular marketplaces, because ShipStation.com brings all your orders into one place to make them easy to manage so you can ship them out fast. How do you ship them? It creates shipping labels for you for top carriers like UPS, FedEx, USPS, and with ShipStation.com, you'll be shipping out more in less time at the best rates. No wonder that ShipStation.com is the number one choice of online sellers. We use it every darn day to ship out your stuff. And right now, you can use it too for your small business, your home business, wherever you sell stuff and ship stuff. Try ShipStation.com free for 30 days. And then you get an additional month free only if you use my last name, Sigler. So don't wait. Go to ShipStation.com before you do anything else. Click on the podcast button at the top of the homepage and type in Sigler. That is ShipStation.com. And enter S-I-G-L-E-R. And now on with our story. Welcome to The Champion, Book 5 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The Champion is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with the first four books in the GFL series, is available as a full-length, unabridged, digital audiobook download from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. As an ebook for Kindle, iPhone, iPad, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback, The Champion is also available as a signed, numbered, limited edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Hello, junkies! Are you ready for some football? We enter the preseason in this episode, episode number 15 of The Champion. Just had an awesome empty set entertainment office holiday party at Disneyland because a real girl herself bushwhacked me with an office Christmas party there at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. We had one LA meeting scheduled for TV stuff. She said she had another set up in Anaheim, and guess who was too oblivious to put two and two together? Moi. So I've never been to any Disney property before. Always wanted to go since I was a little kid. If you want my thoughts on what it was like for a slightly middle-aged man to go to Disneyland for the first time, well, you can tune in after the episode and I will tell you all about it. Also after the episode, we have the promo for the new Paul Cooley novel, The Black. Listen to this one, junkies. It is spooky stuff. So let me get you caught up on The Champion and then we will get into it. Previously on The Champion. The off-season distractions are over, and it's finally time for the preseason to begin. The defending GFL champion Ionath Krakens get ready as a team, but one individual element remains: Becca's rookie contract. Earlier in the story, Quentin promised Becca he would help her with this by introducing her to his agent. And now, episode 15 of The Champion. Chapter 30. Preseason Week 1. The Krakens had seen each other here and there, sometimes out on the streets of Ionath City, sometimes at dinner or at birthday parties, but this was different. The first day of the preseason, the first trip to the locker room, their first official day as defending GFL champions. Quentin arrived a full 2 hours before practice began. He no longer had to worry if Becca would beat him there, because this time, they'd come together. She had gone off to the Heavy G locker room, he to the human, where he prepped his gear and waited for his teammates, waited for the annual ritual of welcoming in the season. Yasud Murphy entered, braided beard bound with thin silver rope. He greeted Quentin with a laugh and a hug. Quentin held him at arm's length, looked the man up and down. Yasud had always been a specimen of human biology, as were most GFL players, but now he looked bigger. Bigger and stronger.
"Hi, Yasud. How much weight did you put on during the off-season?"
"Almost 10 kilos," he said.
I am at 152.
152 kilos, 335 pounds. Yasud packed all of that onto a 6-foot-6-inch frame.
You look great, Quentin said.
Yasud pounded his left fist against his chest 3 times. Bam, bam, bam.
I trained all off-season. Mark my words, Q. You and I are going to be spending a lot more time on the field together this year. Oh, yep.
Yasud backed up Jew Tweedy, the league's most dominant running back. Despite a few injuries, Jew had been named All-Pro last year. Yasud was, and always would be, in Jew's shadow. But still, a motivated second stringer could put pressure on a starter, force that starter to work a little bit harder to keep his job, making both players better in the process. And Jew didn't play every down. With the punishment he took running up the middle, he had to spend some time on the sidelines. Having Yasud as a top-notch third down back would make Quentin's job easier.
This is our year, Sud.
Yasud nodded.
This is our year.
He walked to his locker. Last year had belonged to the Krakens, obviously, but that was in the past. As soon as the last piece of confetti hit the ground, the 26-85 season was over and the title meant nothing. The 22 Tier 1 franchises were back to 0 wins, 0 losses, and it all began again. Quentin would make sure the Krakens worked even harder than the season before. Only 2 teams in GFL history had won back-to-back titles. One was the Hitone Hullwalkers. The other was the Jupiter Jacks, when Don Pine had been at the helm. Quentin would not rest until he had eclipsed each and every one of Don's accomplishments. The rest of the human players filtered in, everyone excited, happy to see each other. Crazy George Starcher, with his face painted a flat blue. Yotaro Kobayashi, the team's number 2 tight end, with the bleach-white skin of a Tower Republic native. Kobayashi's visual opposite, the pitch-black-skinned backup linebacker Samuel Darkeye. Last year's rookie fullback Pete Marvall, still third string, but in great shape. The squad form of Jay Martinez entered next. Third on the running back depth chart behind Jew and Yasud, Jay was just 6'2" and 305 pounds. Tiny for the position, but when he ran with everything he had. Quentin hoped to target him more this year with screen passes and third down situations. Then came Ariok Morningstar, the kicker. As always, he looked calm and somewhat oblivious to his surroundings. He greeted everyone with a simple nod, as if they had finished the 85 season only yesterday. John and Jew came in next, arguing, as always. Some kind of disagreement about how to properly chew gum, it seemed. They were so into their argument that they barely gave Quentin a second glance. Yasud's improved physical stature made Quentin take a new look at Jew. Did you look a little smaller? Muscles not quite so defined, maybe. Quentin wondered if Jew was even aware that Yasud was going all out to get more carries. There were 4 weeks of preseason, though, and that was plenty of time for Jew to regain his all-pro physique. Last in was Yitzhak Goldman. Quentin moved to greet him.
Zach, good to see you.
The backup quarterback stopped walking. He stared at Quentin, stared with a look that could only be described as hatred.
I wish I could say the same, the Tower Republic native said.
His normally all-white skin looked a touch gray. Grayish bags hung under his eyes.
Listen, Zach, Quentin said quietly. If this is about what happened in the playoffs, then what else would it be about?
The two men stood face to face, the 7-foot-tall Quentin towering over the 6'4" Yitzhak, both of them talking so quietly no one else in the locker room could hear.
You got something to say, Zach?
The backup nodded.
Your fictitious high one didn't just make you the best quarterback in the league. He also apparently made you the coach. He made you the owner, the commissioner. High one made you high one, didn't he?
Of course not.
Oh, I must have been dreaming, Yitzhak said.
because I could have sworn that I had a chance to help my team win the Galaxy Bowl. I busted my ass my whole life, worked as hard as I could, even though I didn't see much playing time, all to be ready when my team needed me. And when that time came, you decided to put your girlfriend in the game instead of me. Come on, Zach. Becca wasn't my girlfriend then.
An unhealthy smile slowly broke across Yitzhak's face.
But she's your girlfriend now, isn't she?
Quentin felt uncomfortable. He wondered if the other players were watching the exchange, but he wasn't going to break the stare down.
It wasn't about you, Quentin said. It was about winning that game. You're a good quarterback, but she gave us the best chance at the time. I'm not going to apologize for it. We can talk about this, Zach. You and I can work this out.
You had the off-season to talk to me. 7 months of it. And you didn't bother.
7 months. Zach was right. Quentin hadn't reached out during all that time. Neither had Zach, but that wasn't the way things worked. Quentin was the team leader, and he had made the call to go with Becca instead of Zach. If Zach had reached out first, that would have been a whiny,
"Why didn't you put me in? I feel so bad, so make me feel better,"
kind of groveling. No, Quentin should have started that conversation, yet he'd failed to do that. Could he tell Zach about Janine's kidnapping and all they'd gone through? But even if he did, that whole thing had been resolved in the first couple of weeks following the Galaxy Bowl. That left 6 months plus where Quentin could have done the right thing, but he'd been too busy hanging out with Becca.
"Zach, you're right. I'm sorry, man."
Yitzhak sneered.
"I look like a fool in front of the entire galaxy, and you're sorry. Save your sympathy, High One, because I don't want to hear it. I'll do my job this season. You do yours. Other than that, just stay the hell out of my way."
The backup walked to his locker. Quentin felt awful. He would just have to find a way to make things right. But that would have to wait, because the season was about to begin.
"Let's get out there, guys," he said. "Time to start our title defense."
The human players gave a few quick hoots and hollers. Quentin left the locker room and headed to the field. The grand visage of Ionath Stadium. 22 pillars rose up from the top edge of the empty upper decks, each pillar draped with a long hanging banner representing one of the GFL's Tier 1 teams. Quentin stood at the mouth of the tunnel, staring out at this football cathedral. The pillars carried the familiar logos of the GFL's dominant, enduring franchises: the Toe Pirates, the Jupiter Jacks, the All Criminals. And there were banners that hadn't been there when Quentin had first led the Krakens to Tier 1. The black and metal flake red of the OS-1 Orbiting Death. The red, white, and blue of the Texas Earthlings. The black and emerald green of the Buddha City Elite. The green and gray of the Sheb Stalkers. He could add two more teams to that list. A shimmering, iridescent banner represented the Daoni Coelacanths, champs of the Wittok Conference. Daoni was a city on New Wittok, also the home planet of the Dakau War Dogs. The other team to join the T1 ranks, the McMurdo Murderers, had the strangest logo of any team in the GFL. A pink banner showing a white cartoon bunny with a pink belly, smiling an evil smile, and holding a butcher's knife behind its back. McMurdo was on Earth, football's mother planet. The Coelacanths and the Murderers. Two more teams for the meat grinder. Two more squads packed with players that would scrap and claw, that would fight all season long. Some of those players might die. The survivors would hit and be hit, hurt and be hurt. They would bear the burden of lifelong pain as they chase the ultimate goal of the GFL title. New teams, old teams. Quentin didn't care about them. Only one banner mattered. It was black, orange, and white. On it, the six-tentacle logo of the Ionath Krakens. Champs now, and champs they would remain when the upcoming season ended.
But if Petra's wasps come, will any of this be left?
Quentin shook away the thought. That wasn't his business. He was a football player, not a soldier, not an admiral, and not a politician. He had one job: lead his team to a second straight title.
Hey, Q, ready to begin?
He turned, saw smiling Becca standing at his side. They had agreed there would be no public displays of affection, especially not on the field or in front of their teammates. But Becca didn't have to touch him to show how she felt. Her eyes told the story. His woman, here, ready to fight, ready to work. Becca was no delicate flower, and Quentin wouldn't want her if she were. Becca was a warrior on a team full of warriors. He nodded.
I'm ready.
He was. He was at the top of his game, at the pinnacle of his sport. His dream had come true. Now it was time for a new dream.
2-time Galaxy Bowl champion.
Yeah, that had a nice ring to it. The rest of the Kraken started coming out of the tunnel. Quentin jogged to midfield, Becca Montaigne at his side.
Miss Montaigne,
the heavy G-man said.
How are you this afternoon?
Becca said. Quentin remembered his own first visit to Danny Lundy's office. The woman sitting behind that same desk had quite possibly been the best-looking human he'd ever laid eyes on, so drop-dead hot she had made Somalia look like a street bum. Now, for Becca's visit, Danny had a stylishly dressed heavy G-man that could have been a movie star, or a model, or probably both. Quentin had to wonder if that woman had been placed there just for his benefit, and if this heavy G-man had been placed here for Becca. If so, where did Danny find such good-looking people? The heavy G-man smiled his perfect smile. Becca stared, mouth open. Quentin nudged her.
Oh, Becca said. I'm fine, thank you.
And Mr. Barnes,
the man said.
We're so glad to see you here again.
Quentin nodded. The receptionist gestured to the waiting room's chairs.
Mr. Lundy is on a call,
he said.
Would you both mind waiting? He won't be but a moment.
Quentin started toward the chairs, realized that Becca was still looking at the receptionist, then gently pulled her arm. She blinked rapidly, shook her head, and came along.
Wow, Becca, stare much?
I wasn't staring.
Of course not, Quentin said. Not even a little.
She laughed and covered her mouth with her hand.
Okay, I don't normally stare. I'm not sure I've seen anyone that good-looking in person before. It's weird.
They walked to the chairs, passing by the holos of Danny's clients that lined the walls. Stars like John Tweedy, the sled racer, Fass Arenald, Dino-Lishan star Poughkeepsie Pete, Yitzhak Goldman, Vuko Will, and, of course, Quentin Barnes.
Nice, Becca said as they sat.
She nudged Quentin.
Look at you all fancy with your fancy pants holo. You look all heroic, don't you know?
He hated being highlighted, being shown in a non-team light, and she knew it. She was teasing him, but she should have looked all around the office before she did. He nudged her with his shoulder and pointed to his left.
I think you missed one.
Becca looked, then said nothing. She stared at a holo of herself, all geared up in the orange and black, knocking a Jupiter Jack's Quith warrior on his ass. Quentin nudged her again.
Now that looks heroic. I might even say legendary.
She laughed, embarrassed, and punched his arm playfully. It still hurt, though. The girl bench-pressed around 380.
Shut up, she said. It's only funny when you're embarrassed, don't you know?
My bad. I'll try to remember that.
Sitting there with Becca, Quentin was reminded of when he had sat in these very seats with Yitzhak. Pine had showed Quentin what needed to be done on the field, but off of it, it was Yitzhak who showed Quentin the ropes. The man had helped Quentin see the bigger picture, that getting angry over every little thing stopped you from being happy at the big things.
And you repay him by embarrassing him in front of billions and not bothering once to see how he handled that.
But that meeting, in this very office 2 seasons ago, what was it Zach had said to him? You given any thought to what you'll do after football? It had seemed like a stupid question at the time. What was there besides football? Nothing. Other than finding his family, Quentin hadn't wanted anything but football. So much had changed since then, and Quentin had a bigger perspective on his life, on his place in the universe. Enough to now realize that Yitzhak wasn't talking about Quentin hanging up the cleats and then getting a job or starting a business. The backup quarterback had been talking about something else altogether. Quentin still wasn't sure what, but Zach's question had carried a sense of importance, something larger than Quentin, larger than the Krakens, larger than anything. Quentin didn't know what it was, and probably wouldn't, because Zach sure wasn't interested in talking to him about anything, ironically, other than football.
Hey, Q, Becca said. Anyone home?
He forced a smile.
Sorry, I was just thinking.
Becca nodded toward the holo of Yitzhak.
About him?
How did she always seem to know what was on his mind?
Yeah, he hasn't spoken to me since the first day of practice.
Becca shrugged.
That's on him, not you. You run the offense. You made a call. We're in the business of winning, not in the business of making people feel good about themselves.
Would she have felt the same way if he'd sent her to the sidelines and brought in Kopor the Climber to play fullback? If that had happened in a game with the highest of stakes, without warning, and in front of a watching galaxy and a packed stadium? Probably not. It was easy for her to support his decision. She'd been the one he had chosen.
She's your girlfriend now, isn't she, Quentin?
Quentin silently wished for the imaginary Yitzhak to shut the hell up.
Miss Montaigne,
the heavy G model receptionist said.
Mr. Lundy will see you now. Go right in.
The circular wall to the left of his desk rose up. The holo of Foss Arnold and one of golfer Declan Murphy faded out, revealing a meeting room. Out strode a gleaming, rainbow-colored dolphin, his body resting in a mechanical chassis supported by 4 silver legs. Jewels studded his dorsal and tail fins, as well as the metal cable that ran from the chassis up to an input jack just behind his blowhole.
Becca the Wrecker Montaigne, welcome!
Danny Lundy spoke in squeals and chitters that his chassis instantly transformed into a voice one would expect from a fast-talking super agent. Danny strode forward and offered the smooth hands of one of his 2 streamlined mechanical arms. A smiling Becca shook the offered hand.
Hello, Mr. Lundy.
A pleasure to meet you, buddy,
he said.
I can't begin to say how excited I am about this meeting.
Thank you, sir, Becca said. Quentin's told me a lot about you.
Oh, lies, I'm sure,
the dolphin said.
I'm much nicer than sentience let on, pal. And call me Danny. Come on, let's talk about getting you the representation an athlete of your caliber deserves. An all-pro with your contract, guy? It's a shame, a crime, a travesty. If you sign with me, Greedock will fear you more than he fears someone with really big feet. Ha! But I'm not saying Greedock is a shrimp, because that would be an insult to one of my favorite foods, buddy. Follow me.
Danny walked into the meeting room and sat behind a long glass table. Becca looked at Quentin. She mostly suppressed a laugh of amazement.
Wow, she said. Is he always this intense?
Quentin shook his head.
Not always. You should see him when he really gets fired up. And a little advice. If he pulls out a fish at any point, just duck.
Huh?
Never mind, Quentin said. Let's just go hear what he has to say.
The end of the first week of preseason brought with it one of Quentin's least favorite things, the dreaded media day. In his rookie season, he'd been a train wreck, saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, letting reporters lead him by the nose into comments that would create controversy and help get them page views. But since then, he'd become skilled at managing the press.
"No, Jonathan, we are not a lock. That's your word, not mine. To repeat as champs," Quentin said,
answering a question from reporter Jonathan Sandoval.
"And we're not thinking of anything right now but our opening game against ISIS."
Quentin flashed a practice grin.
"But I appreciate your confidence in us, and I'll send you a Kraken's hat so you look like the overly optimistic fan you clearly are."
The black-skinned human reporter laughed, as did the other reporters surrounding Quentin. They all stood on the 50-yard line, right on top of the sprawling orange, black, and white Kraken's logo painted there. His teammates were spread across the field, each of them surrounded by a few reporters, but his teammates weren't facing the feeding frenzy that circled the Galaxy Bowl MVP. Previous media days had been crazy affairs, sure, but nothing like this. When a team won a Galaxy Bowl, the media paid attention. So many reporters, lined up three deep, all reaching at him with microphones and cameras. At Quentin's side, practically connected to his right hip, stood the comforting presence of Masal the Efficient. Masal would know when the interview session had run its course and gracefully move Quentin back to the locker room area for private one-on-one talks with reporters. Hopefully there wouldn't be too many of those talks, because none of this contributed to winning ball games.
"Quentin! Quentin!"
the multi-headed monster demanded to be fed. He pointed to Ascension at knee level.
"Well, if it isn't Keltbringer, my old buddy," Quentin said. "And what trick question do you have for me today?"
The leaky reporter had been a thorn in Quentin's side for years, always asking seemingly harmless questions, the answers to which could be taken out of context to make Quentin look like an arrogant jerk. Quentin actually had been an arrogant jerk most of that time, but still, Keltbringer had found ways to twist simple answers into something Quentin did not mean. Save for a body belt that held his reporting gear, the leaky was naked, as was the custom of his amphibious species. His black-striped blue skin sparkled in the afternoon sun, showing the defined muscles along his streamlined, flat sides. A hunched-over biped, Keltbringer looked like he would have toppled forward were it not for his long, flat tail. A ridgeline of small spikes rode up that tail, across his back, and ended at the crown of his pointy head. His small yellow eyes watched Quentin. Keltbringer's symbiotes, small insectile things that kept his skin clean, crawled across his sides. Years ago, the sight of those things had freaked Quentin out, but like so many other wonders of the universe, he'd grown accustomed to them.
"You lost Don Pine last year," Keltbringer said.
"We know where he is," Quentin said, "so I wouldn't say we lost him."
It was a bad joke, an easy one, but the reporters laughed politely anyway. Keltbringer's laugh sounded like a horse coughing up a cat that was coughing up a hairball.
"Pine is gone," the leaky said. "You have Yitzhak Goldman as your backup. Will INF move Rebecca Montaigne to second-string quarterback and drop Goldman to third string?"
Quentin should have known that question was coming. Of course, Keltbringer would ask it, because the answer might spark a mini-quarterback controversy. There was no controversy as to the starter, so reporters had to get page views somehow. It was also an honest story angle. A championship-level Tier 3 quarterback returning to her original position. But Quentin would not take the bait. He rubbed his jaw, put on his best, "That's a good question," expression, and stalled so he could think. A pause actually makes you look smarter, more introspective, Don Pine had told him on this very field 3 years ago. Think before you speak.
"Coach Okor is evaluating the depth chart at every position," Quentin finally said. "In the Kraken's franchise, all positions are up for grabs, even mine."
The reporters laughed again. Masal spoke up in his ever so polite yet completely insistent voice.
I am afraid that is all the time Elder Barnes has right now. Those of you who properly scheduled private interviews may report to room 13 at your appointed time, and please do not be late.
The feeding frenzy circle parted. Quentin followed Miss All off the field. All those questions, and he'd handled them well, hadn't given one thing that could blow up into a controversy or be used to motivate the Ice Storm players. On top of that, Janine was safely moved into the Kraken's building. Becca was the best girlfriend a man could want. The team looked strong, ready to fight for another title. Everything had worked out, and Quentin had what he had always wanted. He could truly focus on football and football alone.
Scott Ziegler, you've just finished episode number 15 of The Champion. What are you going to do? I'm going to Disneyland! Which I actually did go to Disneyland in Anaheim, California. It was awesome. My business partner, A. Kovacs, set me up, blindsided me, bushwhacked me with a trip to Disneyland to celebrate our great year, all the fun stuff that we have put out together. Coming up soon, we're going to have a Friday Fix talking about our 2014 year in review. It's pretty impressive, all the stuff we got done. So we deserved a little bit of a break. We went to a meeting for one of the books that's being turned into a TV series. Hopefully, it's either Nocturnal or Infected, to give you a hint. And that meeting went okay. Nothing concrete came of it, like most of these meetings. And then we drove to a second meeting in Anaheim, California. And I didn't know we were going to Disneyland, literally, until we pulled off the highway onto Disneyland exit. And I was like, what are we going to Disneyland exit for? Are we lost? And she's like, no, dummy, we're going to Disneyland. Surprise! And it was friggin' awesome. Mostly was there to eat as much junk food as possible, which I succeeded in. You may pat me on the back and or belly, which is now much more prodigious than it was before the trip to Disneyland. Had me some corn dogs, had me some chili cheese fries, had me some chili dogs. I had all of that good stuff. But I was really there to ride the rides, the very point of going to a theme park in the first place. I rode the Star Wars ride, and in my opinion, it was worth the whole trip just to do the Star Wars ride. C-3PO getting up to all kinds of wacky, crazy business, hijinks ensue, but incredibly theatrical, super, the whole ride shakes and rattles and tips and dumps and lifts and drops. It's, oh, so much fun. It was really, really fun. Then I did the Tower of Terror, which at night is one of the coolest looking buildings in the world. It's a very simple ride, and it doesn't last very long, but I really enjoyed it. Oddly, one of the things I enjoyed the most about all of these rides was the theatrics and the props that go into placating you while you are standing in line for 35 to 45 minutes, including the Indiana Jones ride, where you're standing in line and there's all of this super cool stuff to look at, and there's stuff kind of hinting at the movies from the movies. It's all done really, really well. Probably the only time in my life I will enjoy standing in line for 40 minutes. Did the Haunted Mansion, which is all done up for Christmas. And then...
Space Mountain!
It was awesome! Because I go on that ride, and it's not the most brain-scrambly roller coaster I've ever been on. But I'm pretty sure Spicoli invented this one. I'm pretty sure Spicoli was like an intern at Disney and came in and he had this idea for a ride like, "Rah, listen, all we do is build a roller coaster, then we put a roof over the whole thing and make it dark. My grandma's got these awesome set of Christmas lights. We string all those up and it just works like fine." That's pretty much what the whole thing is. It's a roller coaster in the dark with your grandma's Christmas lights flashing. Maybe that doesn't sound like much. I was giggling through the whole thing because you can't see what's coming. And therein lies the madcap hijinks that is Space Mountain. So, and to cap it all off, we got out of there a little later than we thought. That's right. I sat around for the It's a Bug's Life parade. I did. Lots of floats, lots of crazy people like the Invincibles and all the different creatures from Bug's Life. It was a friggin' parade aimed at six-year-olds.
And yours truly was like, ha, look at that one. Ooh, look at that one. I was very excited about the parade. I'm kind of ashamed to admit it, but the parade was fun. Never need to see it again as long as I live. Never need to hear anyone singing any more Disney songs as long as I live. Definitely got my fill of that. But it was a great trip, and it was super fun. And if you are a grown-up who is frozen in the childhood mentality, much as I am, and you've never been, it's still well worth the trip. Even though you're a grown-ass man, even though you're a grown-ass woman, I think you would enjoy it. Also, before the episode, I told you I would have the promo for the new Paul Cooley novel, The Black. This is straight up gangster monster story. Awesome. Isolation, water, it's going to get kind of out of control. I will let Paul himself explain it to you in this promo, but you want to check out this promo. I'm going to close with this promo. So that is all I have got for this week. We'll be back next week with The Champion, episode number 16. Enjoy the promo for The Black, and I will talk to y'all real soon.
Who's the leader of the pack that's made for you and me?
Under 30,000 feet of water, the exploration rig Leaguer has discovered an oil field larger than Saudi Arabia. With oil so sweet and pure, nations would go to war for the rights to it. But as the team starts drilling exploration wells in their race to claim the sweet crude, a deep rumbling beneath the ocean floor shakes them to their core. Something has been living in the oil. Paul E. Cooley's The Black is a techno-horror thriller reminiscent of movies such as Leviathan and The Thing, and puts terror right into readers' ears. The Black, a free podcast novel available from shadowpublications.com and iTunes. Ocean exploration will never be the same.
You have been listening to The Champion, Book 5 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler, produced by A. Kovacs, and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.